It's 4 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
Thai military launches coup and pledges reform. The UN Security Council imposes sanctions against Boko Haram. I'm Bill Michaels reporting from Washington. The United States has voiced disappointment with the military takeover of Thailand's government, saying there is no justification for the coup. In a statement Thursday, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry voiced concern about reports that senior Thai political leaders have been detained by the military. He called for their immediate release and a return to democracy. Kerry also warned the takeover will have negative implications for U.S. relations with the Thai military. U.S. State Department spokesperson Jen Psaki.
At this point, what we're doing is we are reviewing our military and other assistance to the government of Thailand. We've taken preliminary steps to suspend military engagement and assistance while we consider the facts on the ground. This is a standard part of the process that would take place. So right now, there's a comprehensive review of that going on.
Follow this developing story at voanews.com. The United Nations Security Council has imposed sanctions against Nigerian Islamist group Boko Haram, which has carried out a wave of deadly attacks and the recent abduction of nearly 300 schoolgirls in Nigeria. Nigeria had asked the committee to add the militant group to the list of al-Qaeda-linked entities that are subject to asset freezes, travel bans, and an arms embargo. U.S. Ambassador to the U.N. Samantha Power welcomed the council's action, calling it an important step in support of the government of Nigeria's efforts to defeat Boko Haram and hold its murderous leadership accountable for atrocities. In Nigeria, gunmen killed at least 29 people in a late Wednesday attack on a remote village in the northeast. It was the third major attack blamed on Boko Haram this week. Somali militant group Al-Shabaab has vowed to shift its war to neighboring Kenya by sending more fighters to launch attacks against the government and civilians there. Mohamed Yusuf reports for VOA from Nairobi.
Al-Shabaab on Monday ambushed a Kenyan army convoy in the northeast, close to the border with Somalia, killing at least 10 soldiers. Speaking Thursday in the Somali town of Badere, Al-Shabaab commander Fuad Mohamed Khalaf said the attackers were youths from Kenya. We have trained youths from Kenya and we will be sending them back to their country, he said. The ones we have sent on Monday who have killed your soldiers are the ones you have wronged and we will send more. A United Nations report in 2011 said Al-Shabaab had recruited as many as 500 Kenyan youths. Since then, Kenyan police have arrested dozens of suspected recruits who have crossed back into Kenya. Mohamed Yusuf of VOA News, Nairobi.
Ukraine's acting president says 13 soldiers were killed when pro-Russian separatists attacked a military checkpoint in eastern Ukraine's Donetsk region. President Alexander Turchynov said the service members who died in the overnight attack Thursday gave their lives for Ukraine. He said the separatists attacked the checkpoint using mortars, grenade launchers, and heavy automatic weapons. A bomb attack in China's western Xinjiang has killed at least 31 people in a busy market at the capital of the ethnically divided region. The official Xinhua news agency says more than 90 people also were injured when two sport utility vehicles plowed into a group of people in downtown Urumqi. Witnesses say explosives were thrown out of the vehicles and that as many as a dozen big bangs were heard. Xinhua said one of the vehicles exploded. Pictures posted to social media showed fire and large plumes of smoke rising from the scene. Some victims were being carried away while others were lying in the street. Iran's president says a comprehensive agreement on curbing his country's nuclear program is very likely by July. Iranian President Hassan Rouhani told reporters in Shanghai Thursday that reaching a deal would be achievable, but that it depends on unspecified countries not being allowed to create problems. Mr. Rouhani's comments follow last week's failed round of negotiations in Vienna between Tehran and the five permanent members of the UN Security Council and Germany. And the U.S. House of Representatives has passed a measure to end the National Security Agency's bulk collection of American phone records. I'm Bill Michaels in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, May 23rd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The UN Security Council imposes sanctions on Nigeria's Boko Haram.
It's the people who might be tempted to supply some kind of assistance financially or through arms, of course, and the sale of arms that we want to get at as well to dry up any sort of support for this group.
Gary Quinlan is Australia's ambassador to the United Nations. Nigeria's police respond to new Boko Haram threats directed at two secondary schools. There was renewed fighting this week in parts of South Sudan. We'll have analysis of Zimbabwe's new constitution. And President Joyce Banda says Tuesday's Malawi election was marred by serious irregularities.
The president is concerned that there have been a number of irregularities. First, we to do with the fact that some voting materials were not delivered in time. Also, that results are being announced while some people are voting.
Stephen Mshani is press secretary to Malawi President Joyce Banda. New York producers offer help to get East African fashion off the ground. And an experimental malaria vaccine weakens the disease in children. Those stories, plus Mark Oldman's sports and our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The UN Security Council has imposed sanctions on Boko Haram in a bid to cut off funding and weapons to the extremist group. VOA's Margaret Bashir has more from the United Nations.
On Monday, Nigeria requested that the Security Council impose sanctions on Boko Haram because of the recent surge in its activities. The council moved swiftly, formally adding Boko Haram to its sanctions list on Thursday, imposing an arms embargo and asset freeze. Australian Ambassador Gary Quinlan, who heads the Al-Qaeda Sanctions Committee, told reporters this is a first step toward cutting off international support to Boko Haram.
And it's the people who might be tempted to supply some kind of assistance financially or through arms, of course, and the sale of arms that we want to get at as well to dry up any sort of support for this group.
Boko Haram is based in northeast Nigeria and has killed thousands of people since 2010 in its bid to force the government to adopt strict Islamic law. Most recently, Boko Haram has been in the international spotlight for its abduction of almost 300 schoolgirls in northern Nigeria. Ambassador Quinlan said there is very clear evidence that Boko Haram fighters have trained with Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb and fought alongside Al-Qaeda-linked groups in Mali. He said they also have learned how to make improvised explosive devices, a hallmark of Al-Qaeda. And the group's leader has made strong statements in support of other Al-Qaeda affiliates in Iraq, Afghanistan, Somalia, and Yemen. U.S. Ambassador Samantha Power said that adding Boko Haram to the Council's Al-Qaeda sanctions list is an important step in supporting the Nigerian government's efforts to defeat the group and hold its leaders accountable for atrocities. She said the listing also will close off important avenues of funding, travel, and weapons to Boko Haram while showing global unity against what she called their savage actions. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
Nigerian police say they have strengthened security in all boarding schools in Makurdi and its surrounding areas in Benin State following alleged Boko Haram threats to kidnap students at two all-boys secondary schools. National Police spokesman Frank Mbah says Inspector General of Police Mohammed Abubakar ordered increased security after a group claiming to be Boko Haram militants wrote letters to the Government College and Mount St. Gabriel College threatening to abduct their secondary students. Mbah tells reporter Peter Clotty that the police have launched an investigation into the threat.
I want to say that specifically in response to those threats, which are already subjects of police investigations, the Inspector General of Police, IGP MD Abubakar, has actually ordered the strengthening of security as well as intensive surveillance in and around all boarding schools in Makurdi and its environs. And I will also want to confirm the fact that these instructions, or rather directives, have already been carried out. The Commissioner of Police in charge of Benue State, CP Audu, has already deployed security operatives, patrol vehicles to the affected schools, specifically Government College Makurdi and Mount St. Gabriel College Makurdi.
Some people have expressed concern that due to the abduction of the schoolgirls in Chibok, some armed groups who might not necessarily be connected to Boko Haram could copy what they have done to also go on rampage to kidnap some school children in other parts of the country.
Well, the police have already commenced detailed investigations aimed at ascertaining the source and the authenticity or otherwise of the said handwritten letter, which, in fact, is also in possession of the police. We are not unmindful of the fact that this might not be a Boko Haram element, but we are not treating anything lightly. Therefore, now, it suffices to say that we have threatened security in all boarding schools in and around Makurdi. So the management and staff of the respective schools, we're talking to the Minister of Education, Benue State Government, and we're talking to the stakeholders within the community.
What is the police's message to not only the residents of Makurdi but across the country following the abduction in Chibok and the threats otherwise about staying diligent and working with the police in this directive?
Our advice to Nigerians is to remain eternally vigilant, and that's a price for freedom, that's a price for sources, and that's a price for our collective security. To continue to rally around the various security agencies, to continue to work with the government and people of Nigeria, and to continue to be each other's neighbor's keeper.
Frank Umba is the spokesman for the Nigerian National Police. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Abuja. A spokesman for Malawi President Joyce Banda says although partial results of Tuesday's elections give opposition leader Peter Mutharika a narrow lead, it doesn't mean that the president is losing the election. However, Presidential Press Secretary Stephen Umshane says President Banda is concerned about the release of results while people are still voting in some parts of the country. This comes after the president on Thursday said there were some serious irregularities. Press Secretary Umshane tells me the irregularities include vote rigging, ballot tampering, and multiple voting.
The president is concerned that there have been a number of irregularities, firstly to do with the fact that some voting materials were not delivered in time, and that resulted in some polling centers not opening on the voting day. Also, that results are being announced while some people are voting. That too has been a concern because she felt that that would influence the trend. She also talked about the fact that the winning candidates had more votes than were registered in some particular polling centers. So all these were concerns that she raised, and she asked for the Electoral Commission to do an audit of the whole electoral process.
After an election, it's normally the opposition that complains about irregularities. So the question is, does the president feel that she is losing the vote count?
It's not that she's losing the vote count. Of course, in the vote count, the votes that have so far been counted, it's the other candidates who have taken an early lead, but that does not mean that she's losing. I think you can only say she has lost after all the votes have been counted. But what she was concerned about is that certain things have not been done well, and there was need, for example, to stop the release of the unofficial results while some people are voting.
One account I'm reading is that perhaps she is either second or third in the count according to the results released so far.
Yeah, you see, these are unofficial results, as I've said. We cannot count on them. That's why we are saying, and that's why the president said, why don't we put a stop to the release of these unofficial results? Because some people were voting today, some people were voting yesterday, and yet the results are being announced at the same time. So she found that very illogical.
The opposition leader, Peter Mutharika, is claiming that Malawi police and soldiers were sent to his residence in the capital, Lilongwe, to search for a hacking machine. Is the president aware of this?
I have also just heard it from Professor Mutharika himself, but he always says that the police and the soldiers surrounded his house, not necessarily that they went there to search his house. I don't think they went into the house.
And did they go there to look for a hacking machine, that, assuming that he used the machine to hack the results?
She didn't talk about the hacking machine. The only concern that she had was that some monitors for the ruling party, the People's Party, phones were hacked or could not perform as they are supposed to, because that was supposed to make them work more effectively, but they could not communicate. The issue about the soldiers going to the house of the opposition leader, in fact, the soldiers themselves have said that they were doing that for the protection of the opposition leader himself.
Stephen Mshane is press secretary to Malawi President Joyce Banda. He spoke with me from the capital, Lilongwe. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, May 23rd. Daybreak Africa time is now coming up at 16 minutes past the hour. Military officials on both sides of the conflict in South Sudan say they have received reports of fighting this week in strategically important parts of Upper Nile State. The United Nations says more than 2,000 people have crossed into neighboring Ethiopia within the past few days to escape the violence. Philip Alu of VOA's South Sudan in Focus program has details from Juba.
Sudan People's Liberation Army spokesperson Colonel Philip Aguir blames the opposition for starting this week fighting near oil fields. He says it started in Matiang at the beginning of the week and spread across Upper Nile State.
Yesterday, forces of Riek Machar violated the ceasefire in Nasser by shelling Nasser using mortars and artillery. The second violation is the attack on villages in Barliet County, in which four civilians were killed and more were wounded.
Clashes have been reported every day since President Salva Kiir and opposition leader Riek Machar signed a cessation of hostilities agreement in early May. Opposition military spokesperson Lurwai Kwang says he has received reports of heavy fighting in Upper Nile since Monday, but his forces are not involved.
The version that I'm having is that there was fighting among government forces, and the people that sided on one side were some men, some Shuluk, and some Dinka from Upper Nile State. The three groups, they turned their guns against their colleagues from Greater Baragazal and are still loyal to the system.
Kwang says the government forces are also trying to provoke opposition forces into fighting in other areas of the state.
There was shelling yesterday. The government forces in Nasser, they shelled our position.
Aguirre dismissed both of Kwang's description. He says SPLA officials are documenting all of the fighting that is taking place so monitors can provide verification later.
We are still
issuing those warnings to the rebels to stop the violations. We have been notifying the monitors, the IGAD.
The Intergovernmental Authority on Development, or IGAD, is expected to send the monitors, but it is not clear when that will happen. Officials say they are waiting for the regional troops to be deployed to offer protection, although no firm date has been set for the arrival. For BOA News, I am Philip Tonaleo in Juba.
Zimbabwe's new constitution was adopted overwhelmingly in the referendum, but local and international human rights groups criticized the government for allegedly failing to realign some laws with the new constitution, resulting in what they say is the continued repression of citizens. Amnesty International researcher Simeon Mawenza tells Blessing Zulu of VOA Zimbabwe program that the continued use of unconstitutional laws is a cause of serious concern.
We have seen that in April and May, for example, in Masvingo, about a dozen people were arrested for engaging in peaceful protest over service delivery in the town of Masvingo. We saw on the 3rd of May, on the World Press Freedom Day, where police banned a peaceful march by journalists and other media workers to commemorate World Press Freedom Days. And these are not cases that have been invented by Amnesty International. These are things that are happening on the ground in Zimbabwe, which could be addressed by the government aligning the country's laws with the new constitution and also ensuring that the government authorities are not in the forefront of ordering or violating people's human rights.
But have you engaged the government to try and discuss some of these issues that you are raising, for example, laws that do not comply with the new constitution?
Since the new constitution came into place, you would recall that in November, Amnesty produced a report which was looking at the performance of the government that was elected in July in terms of the human rights priorities. This report was presented to the Zimbabwean government with specific recommendations on how the country can improve its own human rights record. You know, plans are underway to engage with the Zimbabwean government on these specific issues.
Amnesty International researcher Simeon Mawenza was speaking with Blessing Zulu of VOA Zimbabwe program. When it comes to locally made clothes, East Africa lags behind other regions, hamstrung by the ubiquity of cheap foreign-made cast-offs. But now, the producers of New York Fashion Week are helping to kickstart East Africa's fashion industry through a series of runway shows, arguing that the industry could create thousands of jobs, especially for women. Hilary Hewler has more for VOA from Kampala.
Like hundreds of entrepreneurs in the Ugandan capital, Kampala, Emily Walusimbi is in the business of fashion. She sells clothes from a small shop on the side of the road where women of all ages come to look stylish.
They want to go with the trend. What they see in magazines, what they see on the net, that's what they want, not what their parents wear.
But all Walusimbi's clothes are second-hand, made in Europe. And the trends her customers want to follow come from Europe as well, she says.
If there's a new style in Europe, they get on the net, and so they say, I want that one.
Unlike in West or Southern Africa, East African women get almost all their fashion from Europe and America, says Ugandan fashion designer Gloria Wavamuno. Even local tailors shy away from creating their own designs, she says.
We tailor Western styles, so we copycat rather than innovate.
But this year, a group of producers and designers is hoping to kickstart a homegrown fashion industry they say would benefit the regional economy. Backstage at a recent Kampala fashion show, dozens of models and stylists put the final touches on flowing robes, chunky metallic jewelry, and African patterned tunics. LDJ Productions, the producers of New York Fashion Week, are helping to stage a series of runway events throughout the region to showcase local designers and attract sponsorship. They're also planning workshops in business development, marketing, and social media. CEO Laurie DeJong says the fashion industry can help with development by boosting commerce and creating jobs, especially for women.
In New York, we do Fashion Week in Lincoln Center twice a year. And just in the neighborhood that we do Fashion Week in, it brings in $82 million in revenue. So the potential here is enormous.
But, she says, East Africa has a long way to go. Attitudes are slowly starting to change, says Wavamuno, as East Africans come to see fashion as art.
I feel locally we are just starting to understand or appreciate our own local artists and understand that, yes, they can be what you're wearing. You don't have to feel clothes are only made internationally.
But with so many secondhand Western clothes available in markets and shops, some costing less than a dollar, building a business is an uphill battle. The solution, she says, may need to come from politicians. Hilary Hewler for VOA News, Kampala.
Scientists are developing a vaccine against malaria that is designed to limit the illness in children who have been bitten by mosquitoes carrying the disease-causing organism. As VOA's Jessica Berman reports, they have discovered a protein that is essential for malaria parasites to cause severe illness.
With the protein, called SEA, the parasite is able to burst through infected red blood cells, ramping up disease symptoms. But malaria parasites deprived of SEA are trapped inside the cells, where they wither away and are eventually eliminated from the body by the spleen. Researchers at Brown University in Providence, Rhode Island, and Boston Children's Hospital in Massachusetts discovered the protein. Jonathan Curtis is director of the Center for International Health Research at Rhode Island Hospital and lead author of the study, which appears in the journal Science. Curtis says an experimental vaccine containing antibodies against the parasitic protein was developed and tested in mice. Rodents that received the vaccine were only mildly sick and had fewer parasites in their bodies than untreated mice. Next, Curtis says investigators measured levels of antibodies to the SEA protein in a group of 785 Tanzanian children.
And children with antibodies to our protein never got severe malaria. There were zero cases, as compared to children who did not have antibodies to our protein.
Researchers then analyzed blood samples collected in 1997 from 140 children in Kenya. Investigators found there were 50% fewer parasites in the serum of youngsters that produced antibodies to SEA during a high transmission season. As with the Tanzanian children, there were also no severe cases of the disease in children with antibodies against the protein, according to Curtis.
And so the thought is, by immunizing people with the SEA protein so that they make their own antibodies, they'll be protected.
The next step, Curtis says, is to test a laboratory-made SEA vaccine to see whether it works in primates. Curtis says he's excited that researchers may be on the verge of an effective drug that lessens the severity of a malaria infection, but he's also humbled.
Our eye has to be on the prize, and the prize is, you know, a child every 15 seconds, just during this phone conversation, you know, dozens and dozens of children have died of malaria. It's just unbelievable.
If the vaccine proves to be safe and effective in monkeys within the next year, researchers expect they'll move quickly to human vaccine trials. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. A very good Friday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with athletics. Over 40 nations have converged in the Bahamas capital, Nassau, for the inaugural IAAF World Relays starting tomorrow, Saturday. The two-day event features the men's and women's 4x100 meters, 4x200 meters, 4x400 meters, 4x800 meters, and 4x1500 meter relays in front of a sold-out Thomas Robinson Stadium, the IAAF revealed in Nassau on Thursday. A total of $1.4 million cash prize is up for grabs, with the top 18 in the 4x100 meters and 4x400 meter relays assured of automatic qualification to the 2015 World Athletics Championships in Beijing, China. Meanwhile, Paul Kipsiele Koech clocked 8 minutes and 6.04 seconds to lead a Kenyan 1-2-3-4-5 sweep in the men's 3,000 meter steep, which is at the IAAF World Challenge meet in Beijing, China on Wednesday night. South African Andre Olifield won the 800 meters, and Morocco's Rababi Arafi and little-known Ethiopian Gudev Tsegay topped the women's 1,500 meters, while Kenyan Purity Cherotich, Moroccan Salima Alami Luali, and Ethiopian Bitu Kanadamu secured an African 1-2-3 sweep in women's 3,000 meter steep. Elsewhere, the Athletics Federation of Nigeria Golden League Series continues in Kaduna, North Central Nigeria tomorrow, Saturday. Home-based athletes who have been in residential training since last year are vying for qualifying standards to the IAAF World Junior Athletics Championships in Eugene, Oregon State, USA in July, the British Commonwealth Games in Glasgow, Scotland in July, and the African Senior Athletics Championships in Marrakesh, Morocco in August. Turning to football, the Democratic Republic of Congo hosts Malawi in the return leg of the Africa Youth Championship qualifiers in Kinshasa today, Friday. Tomorrow, Saturday, Ghana play Sierra Leone, Zambia meet Mozambique, Ivory Coast engage Liberia, Gabon face Rwanda, Nigeria welcome Tanzania, and defending champions Egypt host Sudan. On Sunday, South Africa play Ethiopia, Morocco encounter Togo, Benin play Republic of Congo, Angola tackle Lesotho, Mali engage Burkina Faso, Cameroon face Burundi, and Tunisia engage Libya. Elsewhere, Ivory Coast welcome defending champions Equatorial Guinea in Abidjan in the Africa Women's Championship qualifiers today, Friday. Algeria engage Tunisia, Ethiopia play Ghana, Zimbabwe host Zambia, Senegal face Cameroon, Comoro Islands welcome South Africa, and Rwanda engage Nigeria. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa, wishing you all a sporty weekend. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good weekend, and we look forward to your report again on Monday. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. The United Nations Security Council has imposed sanctions against Nigerian Islamist group Boko Haram, which has carried out a wave of deadly attacks and the recent abduction of nearly 300 schoolgirls in Nigeria. Nigeria had asked the committee to add the militant group to the list of Al-Qaeda-linked entities. That's it for this Friday, May 23rd edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Tracy Carter, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stradek, as well as sports editor Mark Ouma, I'm James Barton in Washington, hoping that you'll make this weekend a very restful one.
African Music Mix.
Are you wandering around lost in a musical desert? Well, follow your ears to the fantastic, the one and only African Music Mix on the Voice of America. Bathe yourself in this musical oasis. north to the south and from the east to the west, the African Music Mix plays only the best. Tune in from 0 to 300 hours UTC and from 11 to 1300 hours UTC every single day on the Voice of America.